Listen to the voices of our world.
You're talking about 50 million people in this country who either need a job or who are working full-time and are just not making it week in and week out. And that is a very significant number.
They end up paying hundreds of dollars to borrow $200 or $300. So the interest rates are astronomical.
There are 2 billion people in this world who live on less than $2 a day.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eileen Bott. Did you ever hear that old song, 16 Tons? Well, as the lyric goes, we are all another day older and a deeper in debt. Our national debt is now up at $6,793,571,980,569.91. And most of us are carrying a fair amount of personal debt. It may be that owing has become a mainstay of American culture, and today we'll be talking about that with Michael Hudson, contributing editor of Southern Exposure magazine, and William Quigley, author of Ending Poverty as We Know It. And we'll hear from British economist David Stewart. Okay, now as you can see, both contestants are about to take their seats on opposite ends of the seesaw. On the right, we have two-time Kentucky Derby-winning jockey, fresh from his appearance in the movie Seabiscuit, Gary Stevens. Left, we have Hawaiian sumo wrestling champ Aki Bono. Taking their positions will have to be a very delicate move. And they're on. Thanks to Mr. Aki Bono's finesse, Stevens did not go airborne. He's still on. Way up there with Aki Bono on the ground. And there's no movement, actually. Aki Bono is smiling and waving and Stevens is swinging his legs back and forth very vigorously, but Stevens seems to be hopping up and down, trying. But, well, you know, of course the dismount could be a little tricky, but basically, folks, I think this contest is over. Imbalance can be paralyzing. Even Warren Buffett, one of the richest men in America, said that the latest wave of tax cuts would do little to stimulate the economy. Since $400 child credits cannot even begin to offset state fee hikes and service cuts for a young couple scraping by on $33,000 a year. Buffett said, as long as Washington continues to immunize the rich and abandon the poor, the economy will flatline. If you're not sure you can afford a doctor's visit for your child this month, then you've got bigger worries than stimulating the economy. Extreme disproportion in the distribution of wealth in this country is driving us to dysfunction. Jeffrey Immelt, new chairman of General Electric, the company with the third highest profits in the country, made just under $23 million in compensation last year. Robert Rubin, chairman of Citigroup, with the second highest profits, made more than $18 million. L.R. Raymond, CEO of ExxonMobil, with the highest profits in the country, got nearly $26 million. If those three CEOs alone gave up all that gravy for just 1 year, we could lift more than 6,000 minimum wage earners to a living wage. It certainly wouldn't hurt Mr. Raymond, Rubin, or Immelt, but making life a little better for those 6,000 struggling Americans might be a step in the right direction. And can you be a proper consumer with an empty wallet? Ah, but you can borrow. Enter a whole new way to compound the pain of poverty. Predatory lending practices with the banks that specialize in making your losses their gain. Michael Hudson is the co-author of Merchants of Misery, How Corporate America Profits from Poverty, and a contributing editor with Southern Exposure magazine. Producer Eleanor Ostrinsky got to speak with Michael Hudson by phone about his latest article on the subject.
Why the title, Banking on Misery?
It's kind of a catch-all phrase. You know, big Wall Street finance companies have really targeted low-income and minority consumers over the years. People who are locked out by the mainstream banks, who end up paying extremely high interest rates and are targeted for fraud and hidden charges and all kinds of really ugly deals. And that's a phenomenon that's been going on for a long time, that the people who have the least end up paying the most to borrow money. But what has changed over the years is that Wall Street has gotten involved and they realize you can make a lot of money if you're charging people 10 or 15% on a mortgage when everyone else is paying 5 or 6% or 7% or 20% or even 40% on a personal loan, or as much as 200, 300, even, believe it or not, 400% on what's called a payday loan, where you go in to a check cashing outlet and you write a post-dated check, which they agree to hold for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and in essence is a loan.
What do you mean by that? Can you explain this check cashing mechanism?
Right. You need money. You're desperate. You're trying to cover a medical bill or pay your rent. And you go in and you don't have any money in the bank, but you write a check that's post-dated 2 weeks from now. And the check cashing outlet under the deal agrees to hold the check and not cash it until that date. If you want to borrow $200, you'll write a check for, say, $240. They keep $40 as their fee. You get the $200, and then you have to make sure that in 2 weeks you have to have the $200 to cover what's in your account. And as you can see, it puts you in a really vulnerable position, because what if you don't have that money? Can the check cashing outlet now charge you criminally for writing a bad check? And so what happens is people get into a cycle where they have to come back and redo it again and again and refinance the loan, and they end up paying hundreds of dollars to borrow that $200 or $300. So the interest rates are astronomical.
Well, I finally understand why there's so many check cashing places around where I live. I never really understood how they made their money off of the $2-3 fees for various services. So clearly they make a lot more. Tell me, why would banks tend to reject that particular group of people, people with low income or minority folks? Why would they reject them in the first place?
Well, you know, redlining, if you've heard that term, banks in the old days, 30, 40, 50 years ago, would literally draw red lines around maps of their cities and say, we're not going to lend money in these neighborhoods, the minority, low-income neighborhoods. Today, it's not as explicit, but it's still happening. Most minority neighborhoods are underserved. You can't find bank branches. You have to go miles and miles to find one. People don't have ongoing relationships with banks, so when it's time to borrow money, when they're in trouble, when they need money, or when they want to take a step forward in their life and, say, buy a house, it's difficult. So banks won't lend you money at the front door, but they will lend you money at the back door, in the sense that most of the banks, including the world's largest bank, Citibank, own subsidiaries that target what they call the subprime customer, low-income, blue-collar, minority consumers who aren't getting the bank loans. In some cases, it's because their credit is bad, but in many cases, it's just because of their status, because they're African-American, because they're Hispanic, and banks have decided we're not going to lend in those neighborhoods. So they end up having to go to subprime consumer finance companies like Citibank's subsidiary, City Financial. And the interest rates they pay there are really astronomical. And the practices of these companies are really worrisome. There's a lot of sleight of hand when people come in to sign their contracts. You know, here, sign here, sign here. And people don't understand that they've added in all kinds of hidden fees. They're charging people for credit insurance, which is an overpriced and usually worthless product that just boosts the lender's profits rather than protecting you in any way.
What is credit insurance?
Credit insurance is supposed to cover the loan if you die, if you become unemployed, if you become disabled. It is, as the Consumer Federation of America has said, it really is the nation's worst insurance ripoff. And, you know, as one consumer advocate said to me, when you're buying insurance, you shouldn't buy insurance to cover your banker. You should buy it to cover your spouse in case something happens to you. You're much better off going to an independent insurance agent and saying, I want $10,000, $20,000 in life insurance, $50,000, than you are basically letting your lender buy you insurance, because they're always going to buy overpriced insurance. Usually it's from a subsidiary. So they're making profits all around, and they have an incentive to boost the cost up as much as possible. They're not shopping around for you.
Yeah, that's for sure. Actually, in one of your articles, you wrote that what we used to call debt, we now call credit, and it's not exactly the same thing.
Right.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's been a real psychological change. You know, it used to be we called it debt, and, you know, you were in the hole by definition, and you did it very carefully. And you would do it for a very good reason, which was to invest in your future. You would go into debt to buy a house. And obviously, that's something that would give you stability in your lives, and it was a chance to build wealth. maybe you would go into debt to buy a car, which could give you some ability to get to a better job, get to school, or you would go in debt to go to school. And that was sort of the investment model of borrowing. Now, you know, we call it credit. You know, we're giving you credit. We're patting you on your back. You know, we're giving you this gold card and therefore asking you to join this exclusive club. Well, it's not really that exclusive because there's tens of millions of people just like yourself. But the psychology of it is we're doing you a favor. And now we have moved to a consumption model of borrowing where it's all about buying stuff on credit, buying toaster ovens, buying stereo equipment, everything you can get on credit now. You drive through some inner city neighborhoods and you see places where you can buy eyeglasses on credit. In my hometown here in Virginia, there used to be a storefront called Banker's Optical.
That's amazing.
Things have changed. And it used to be that the lending industry, you know, considered the best customers those who would borrow a specified amount of money and would pay it off in a specified amount of time. But now the best customers in the industry's eyes are those who continue to borrow money and stay in debt at the highest possible rate, kind of like the old company store principle. You know, you never get out of debt. You're always in the hole. And more people, I talked about it, that these subprime high-interest lenders were targeting, you know, the low-income, blue-collar minority people. But now, you know, they saturated that market, and they're really extending their reach, trying to go after more affluent folks who maybe are making good money and have some wealth, but they're still kind of living paycheck to paycheck because, you know, in America, we always seem to push ourselves to the limit and overextend ourselves no matter how much money we make. So folks who have overspent on their credit cards, or maybe they've gotten hit with unexpected hospital bills and, you know, they bought a house that was maybe a bit too pricey and now they're feeling the pinch, they end up going to these subprime lenders and getting caught in really nasty deals.
It is amazing. We don't use cash anymore. You know, people will charge $7.
Right.
And somehow, because you're not actually pulling out the cash and putting it down and remembering how hard it was for you to get it, can you tell us or give us an example of one or two people and how these banking practices have affected them?
Yeah, there was a lady I interviewed from Atlanta. Her name is Maria Flores. She broke up with her boyfriend and ended up getting stuck with loan payments from City Financial. You know, and she couldn't keep up. And she says that the manager threatened to send someone to her job with an arrest warrant. And so when the manager told her, you need to come in here and get a new loan, she thought she had no choice. So she ended up taking out a second mortgage on her house and digging herself even deeper in a hole. And so she ended up falling farther behind. She says that City Financial was forcing her to write post-dated checks to try and catch up. And then as she continued to fall behind, they forced her to get another loan. You know, these companies love to get you to refinance again and again because they're rolling in new fees. So she ended up with a mortgage at a 17.99 annual percentage rate, about triple the market rate for home loans. And almost all of the mortgage was debt rolled over from the previous loan. And it cost her $300 in fees to get $93 in new money. But she felt like she didn't have a choice. She was desperate. She said, I thought they were going to take my house. So she did like what many other folks end up doing is, you know, signing on that line. You know, the only way we're going to get control of our individual financial lives and get control of, you know, the larger financial system is to debate this issue and not be afraid to ask questions.
Michael Hudson, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
As a nation and as individuals, have we become too comfortable with debt? Let our producers know what you think. Log on to the Voices of Our World webpage, www.maryknoll.org. There's a spot there for your feedback. I'm Eileen Bott. You're listening to Voices of Our World. You can call us at 1-888-MARYKNOLL. That's 1-888-MARYKNOLL.